Welcome, all of you wine and true crime lovers. I'm Brandy.
And I'm Chris.
And this is Texas Wine and True Crime. Thank you for being here, friends, for this week's episode, The Case of Melissa Lucio. Hey, Chris.
Greetings, Brandy.
How are you?
I'm doing excellent. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm ready to talk about this case. This is a big one.
It is a pretty big case. Yes, absolutely.
It's going on right now, even though some believe case closed. But this will be, this is a tough one. But again, this is a woman sitting behind bars. And we're going to kind of find out what is happening with Melissa Lucio and why she is sitting on death row in Texas.
We are, indeed.
We are. Tonight, we are sipping on Avante Sangiovese Rosé. This is a Texas Sangiovese Rosé that is fruit-forward, as its Italian name implies. So, Chris, this is a summer wine. It's pink in color with strawberries, cranberries, and a hint of honeydew melon.
It's almost summer here, technically.
Yes, it is getting warm. Summer is almost upon us, so we thought we would share this one with all of you today. All right, babe, are you ready to hop into this week's case?
Let's dive in.
All right, friends, let's sip some wine and talk some crime. This week, we are sharing the story of Melissa Lucio out of Harlingen, Texas. So let's share a few key facts about Harlingen and where this crime or accident took place. Number one, Pendleton Park in Harlingen is home to HEB Tennis Center. The center is named after Howard E. Butt, a founder of HEB Groceries, who lived in Harlingen in the 1930s and was an avid tennis player. Interesting.
And he opened the store how long ago?
I have no idea. When was the first HEB?
I don't know. It's been around. They're slowly making their way up here.
Yes.
In our neck of the woods.
Slowly. Not even close, though. The closest one's just like 45 minutes away. An hour, right?
Yeah, but I mean, it used to be you had to travel down south, like San Antonio Way or...
Oh, that's true.
Austin-ish, San Marcos.
All right, well, and he was an avid tennis player, so there you go.
Howard E. Butt.
B-U-T-T.
Hmm.
Just how it sounds.
Quite sure he never had any interesting names whilst going to school.
Yeah, well, kids are mean.
No, he made a little something out of himself, I guess.
Yeah, he did. Number two.
Man named Butt.
Lon C. Hill was a lawyer from Beeville, Texas, who began buying land in the fertile Rio Grande Valley in 1902, clearing it out, digging irrigation canals. He was a busy guy. So they build a house, Chris. He builds himself a house in 1905, and it is now preserved at the Rio Grande Valley Museum in Harlingen.
Yeah, I love the valley. It's very fun down there.
Well, we flew into Harlingen to go to South Padre. That's where you fly in.
I've been to McAllen a lot of times, too.
Oh, you have?
I have.
Oh, okay.
Back in the days when you used to be able to travel over to Mexico and go party for the night.
Yes.
For like $5. And
those were the days.
Stumble home.
Yep. All right, number three. The city's first grave was dug in 1909 when the son of a sugar grower slipped and fell into a vat of boiling syrup.
That had to hurt.
That's sad. I guess it's one of those big silver. That's, I guess I'm envisioning. Like,
yeah, and super hot too, because sugar has a
boiling.
I think a little higher boiling point than your standard liquid.
Yeah, so that was the first grave. And then after that, they decided when they needed another grave, then that's when they started their cemetery there in Harlingen. Chris, something I was reading, but did you know, as far as like segregation, that African Americans and women and people that weren't white were buried on opposite sides of the cemeteries? Did you know that?
I didn't know that, but it doesn't surprise me in these parts.
No, it doesn't surprise me. I just had no idea.
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, I know there is even... separate cemetery. So I think Dallas has one, that one that's kind of in the uptown area.
Yeah.
Is Howard Butt buried in Harlingen?
I don't know. I have no idea where Howard Butt is buried. He lived there. I don't know if he was actually born there, though. I don't know. Let us know.
It's worth looking it up. Yeah.
It is. 53-year-old Melissa Lucio has been in prison since her daughter Mariah died in February of 2007. The family called 911 after the toddler was found unresponsive at their Harlingen apartment. Numerous bruises, scratches, and what seemed to be a bite mark on her body led police investigators to believe the child had been killed. Mariah's death was later determined to be caused by a blunt force head injury. Melissa Lucio was questioned for hours, telling police that she loved her daughter and would never harm her. She eventually confessed to this crime. She stood trial, was found guilty, and sentenced to death. She is the first woman of Hispanic descent in Texas to be sentenced to death, and she is set to be executed on April 27th of this year. What happened that day in the Lucio family home? Okay, Chris, this is a closed case in the eyes of the justice system. They have the murderer behind bars, and she is 1 month away from facing execution. So who is Melissa Lucio? Okay, so back in 2007 when this occurred, Melissa Lucio was 38 years old and had given birth to 12 children by this time. That's a lot of kids.
That's a lot of kids.
Nine of those children were living with the family in 2007, and Mariah was the youngest child of the 12. So she was 2 years old at the time of her death. Chris, Melissa was also pregnant with twins when Mariah died. And when she went to prison, she ended up actually giving these twins up for adoption because she had them while she was in prison. She had three children from her first husband and nine from her second. So she grew up poor near the Rio Grande Valley. She has said multiple times that she had been molested for years as a child by two men that were close to the family. She became a child bride at 16, which is illegal here in the state of Texas unless you get parent approval. So Chris, her mom consents to this marriage. Melissa actually will later say in interviews that she thought this was a way to get out of the abuse she was enduring, you know, being in her own home. The abuse and sexual pressures started for her at a young age, and she claims that both of her husbands physically and mentally abused her. So we're seeing a cycle here.
Yes, absolutely.
So we'll talk about that cycle a lot in this case. Now, Chris, there was a lot. This woman endured a lot through her life. She has a lot of kids, little to no education, unable to support so many children on her own. Having a man in her life was a necessity. So she learned to live with the behaviors and the trauma. Probably like the same way she learned to live with the behaviors and the trauma when she was a child.
Yes.
So you're willing to put up with a whole lot more. I wouldn't say you're willing to put up with a whole lot more, but you are more prone to accept this kind of behavior if you've lived that kind of behavior.
I would agree with that.
One thing she did not have was any reported abuse of her children. Now, this is very interesting. There are no records of any neighbors, CPS, or family members accusing Melissa of ever harming her kids. But Chris, CPS was actually brought to the house several times, but never was anything documented about her physically abusing any of her children.
Wonder why that is.
Well, probably because they didn't find any evidence of it. I mean, they might find evidence of neglect. That's a lot of children, okay? And this one woman started having children when she was still a child. So, you know, I think that there was probably some concern, and which is why CPS, but I have, in my research, I have actually read that there are hundreds of CPS documented pages about this family, but none of that, from what I can gather, has actually said she was an abuser of these kids. Well,
they may have considered how many kids she had and just the, you know, the magnitude of the task of trying to place all these children.
Right.
You would think that wouldn't cloud anybody's ideas or opinions or actions, but could be a reality of the
This wouldn't be the first time the system failed, you know, children and people. I as a child, the system failed her. So, but nothing is documented. There's nothing physically in writing that says she has ever abused her kids, even though there are, from what I have been told and what I have been reading, I couldn't find the actual CPS documents anywhere, but I have heard there is hundreds of pages on her and the family. So let's talk about what happened to 2-year-old Mariah. On the night of February 17th, 2007, paramedics responded to a call at the home shared by Melissa and her husband, Robert Alvarez. So the call concerned the couple's young daughter, who was Mariah. She's 2 years old, the youngest of 12 children. Now, when the EMTs arrive, Chris, they find Mariah on the living room floor. So, and I just want to say, a lot of my research came from court documents. I actually found a lot of the open record documents on this case and the Court of Appeals and all kinds of information. So this information came from the EMTs and the doctors that saw Mariah that night. So the first thing that notice is nobody is near her. She's laying in the middle of the floor, not moving, unresponsive, but nobody is trying to resuscitate her. Nobody's trying holding her. And they felt the mother being there, and the mother being the sole, the mother would eventually say that Mariah was with her mostly all the time, right? So she's in her care all the time. But nobody is trying to help the child is the first thing that EMTs notice. So her body is covered with bruises in various stages of healing. Her arm had been broken for, they say, from about 2 to 7 weeks prior to finding her unresponsive. She had a bite mark on her back, and some of her hair had been pulled out from the roots.
That's terrible.
She was not breathing, and she had no pulse. So, Chris, the EMTs try to resuscitate Mariah. They bring her to the hospital. And when she got to the emergency room, the doctors in the emergency room also tried to revive her. But all of those efforts were unsuccessful, and Mariah was pronounced dead. And I just want to say that whether or not this woman is guilty of this crime, which we will talk about, this child was clearly neglected and abused. And even if the woman has nothing to do with the physical abuse, even if it wasn't her directly, if she knowingly stands by and allows it to happen, then she becomes a willing participant in covering up a crime. That's the way I look at it. I'm not a lawyer. I can talk about cases I've read and seen, but the fact of the matter is this child was being abused.
Well, I mean, and plus especially the broken arm for weeks going on and nobody's addressed that. I mean, clearly you would think that someone would be guarding that arm and kind of, you know, very tender and all that stuff, so...
I mean, what did this child have to endure? I mean, these cases are hard enough for us to do. We don't do a lot of child cases because they're children and they're hard. It's hard to talk about. But this is the kind of thing, you know, you're standing by and you're allowing it to happen. And you're guilty of something, right? So is she guilty of capital murder? I don't know. We shall see. So Mariah did have physical disabilities that made her walking unstable, and she did have a history of falling, including a documented fall at a preschool. Now, Chris, this is interesting. It's noticed that she actually lost consciousness when she fell at the preschool.
So she hit her head?
She hit her head. I mean, which is what we're going to get into about the fall and what Melissa Lucio tells authorities. But there is documentation that she has fallen and hit her head before and lost consciousness. So 2 hours after Mariah's death, Melissa is hauled into the interrogation room. Now, I haven't mentioned this yet, but the Innocence Project picked up Melissa's case. So this woman is set to die in 30 days, unless the governor of Texas decides to do something differently and issue a stay of execution. But there have been, again, multiple signatures, multiple letters to the politicians and to Governor Abbott. And there has been a clemency writing. I mean, all of this information is now into the hands of people in Texas to do something about this, for Governor Abbott to actually make a decision on this. And I have to say, if this woman is innocent of this, this can't be an easy decision based on the facts of this case. Do you know what I mean?
So why are people coming to her side and claiming her innocence?
Well, let's keep going. And I'll talk about that. I'll talk about that some, but I'm just saying right now, looking at what this child endured, knowing that she was in this home and whether she was the one inflicting the abuse or not, she had to have some idea it was happening. So I feel like it's stacked against her right now. Do you know what I mean? Just what this child went through.
Yes, I do know.
Okay, they do believe, so the Innocence Project picks this case up. They believe that she's innocent and she is sitting behind bars. According to their documentation, for over 5 hours, armed male police officers stood over her, yelled at her, threatened her, berated her parenting, and repeatedly refused to accept anything less than admission to causing her daughter's death. They believe she was especially vulnerable to the aggressive, intimidating, and psychologically manipulative interrogation tactics of the police and male authority figures due to her history of abuse, trauma, her low IQ, and abnormally high levels of compliance, agreeing with what you say. Don't hurt me. I'll agree with you, right?
Well, and I think her low IQ is probably one of the bigger factors of why no one was doing anything when the child, they initially arrived on the scene. I mean, the average person has no idea what to do in the event of emergency, especially when someone's injured.
Right.
And if you have 12 kids, you probably...
9 of which are in the home. That's still a lot.
I'm just saying she's probably seen it all and done it all with all these kids. Yeah. And so I think perhaps someone may be a little more calm in... I mean, you would think there'd be no the cause to be calm, of course. But I mean, who knows if it was the child? Was the child already not breathing? Had it been a long time? There's all these little factors,
right? That
could possibly present itself of her not being guilty. I mean,
well, we're going to talk
capital
about
murder
of capital murder, right? And see, this is the thing: is she guilty of some things? Absolutely. But this case is about a capital murder charge of blunt force trauma to the head of your child, and you are guilty of abuse and neglect, and you delivered that blow to the head.
Yes.
I mean, that legally, that's what we're discussing. All right, Melissa Lucio asserted her innocence, Chris, 86 times. She verbally said she never did anything to her, and 35 times non-verbally by shaking her head. But they just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. So they have her in the interrogation room. The interrogation started about 9 or 10 o'clock that night. Okay. Then they go on for a few hours. A Texas Ranger comes into the room about 1 a.m. At 1 a.m., he's in there with other police officers, and they question her. I think she finally gave in at about 5 a.m. So they had her for about seven hours. All right, Chris, it's already time for a wine recess.
Okay, already time for a wine recess.
I just couldn't wait to talk about what you made for dinner tonight.
Should I talk about it?
Yes.
And you listen?
It's so good. Tell us.
It doesn't happen often.
That I listen?
That I talk.
Oh. Both.
And you listen.
All right. Tell us about what you made.
So I paired this delicious wine that we had. It was a rosé. So I was left a little scratching, I guess, stunned. I don't say stunned, but scratching my head as to what to present along with this meal. But did a little research and saw that it went with some spicy options. And so I made a shrimp and lobster fra diavolo with a... I don't know what I'll call it, a summer salad, but it was a watermelon salad with some cucumber and some maters, some blueberries, watermelon, some mint, and some honey, and tossed it all together. And so it was nice and cool and refreshing. It kind of enhanced the sweetness of the wine and, of course, the spiciness of the pasta dish. And then I did make another side of some little, just some green beans and some colorful peppers and another little special sauce with it.
It's so special. It was so good. It was so good.
Yeah, a little bougie. Need to start finding a way to finance these meals here because we don't eat like that on a normal weekday.
I know.
But yeah, it was pretty good. I think it all went kind of well and it was nice and refreshing to have a crisp wine. It was a little dry. And so it was not, it, you know, you had a little hotness in your mouth and the wine kind of extinguished that flame from the spicy tomato sauce. And that was good.
It was so good.
Came out good.
And as always, you go above and beyond and so much love in your food. Yeah. So,
well, thank you. Thank you. Thank
and
you.
And friends on a Patreon, we are getting you your recipes. We officially moved back into our house fully. So we have been a little delayed with those, but they're coming. Right, Chris?
Yeah, they're coming. we have had lots to do getting this
house. It's been a lot. But we're settled. We're getting settled.
All the boxes moved and unpacked. And
yes. Oh, and jobs.
And jobs. we had those. Well,
we've had those. All right, babe. You ready to get back into the case?
Yep. Let's dive back in.
Let's do it. Okay, Chris, we know police can use certain tactics, right, in order to get the truth out of someone. But we know the longer an interrogation lasts, the likelihood of getting a false confession goes way up. Mariah did not fall down the stairs and then die. She died 2 days later. So let me talk about the interrogation a little bit. So when the EMTs arrive, they notice the injuries on this child. Okay, she's not breathing. She's found unresponsive. They bring her to the hospital. When Melissa Lucio is brought in for questioning, she tells authorities that her child fell down the stairs 2 days before her death. She mentions at some point that the child had been vomiting, that the child wasn't eating, which can all be signs of abuse and neglect.
And a concussion.
And a concussion.
That's the main signs of concussion. So
she says that the child took a spill down the apartment stairs on the outside stairs and she hit her head. Now, one of Lucio's sons was questioned by law enforcement shortly after the child's death, and there was a video taken of this, and this female officer asked the boy, you know, did you see your sister fall down the stairs, or did someone tell you that she fell? And he responds that he actually saw his sister fall down the stairs. Now, I don't know the age of this boy. I couldn't find any information on that, but he claims to have seen his sister fall. According to the Innocence Project, Mariah's death was declared a murder before the autopsy even began. The state's medical examiner, who was the name Dr. Farley, was told going into the autopsy that Miss Lucio had already confessed to abusing Mariah and who was accompanied. So in the autopsy room, Chris, there's two interrogation officers, and basically everything they observed, they said was just evidence of abuse and just ignored everything that else it could have possibly been, which Melissa Lucio says was a fall down the stairs 2 days before the child is found unresponsive.
Doesn't the pathologist make that final call on what the cause of murder is?
Right. The medical examiner does. So she, but there, what the Innocence Project is saying is that there was influence there. You're influencing a medical examiner. They're taking law enforcement's word at the fact that this child was abused. Nobody's arguing that there were no signs of abuse. There was clearly signs of abuse. This child, and I'm not even done talking about her injuries. This child did not have these injuries falling down the stairs. Could she have blunt force trauma to the head falling down the stairs? Absolutely. But her other injuries were not caused by a fall down the stairs. And I think this is the problem in this case, is you have signs of abuse and then the child dies. But what if the child did fall down the stairs? What if that child did hit their head? I mean, that I think that's the biggest problem with this case, is that this child was just abused and neglected. And, you know, the state of Texas doesn't like that.
Well, that could have been part of the abuse and neglect, was not addressing the child's injury.
That's right. If she did fall, that's right. Now, they did say, the parents said after she fell, there was nothing to show that there was something wrong with her. That's why they didn't get medical care after the fall, because she seemed fine. That is what Melissa Lucio tells the investigators.
Yeah, we have a very popular case right now in the media of a comedian who died.
Yes.
After a fall, they think, and had blunt force trauma to the head, and then died later. People can, I don't know.
Oh, it happens.
I don't know how many days someone can go, but I mean,
it happens
all the time.
It does. I read about a case that a guy fell off a ladder. Off of a two-story house, fell backwards and hit the back of his head and passed away a couple of days later. I mean, it does happen. So then they believe that there is some influence with the state medical examiner, that the police are already in the ear of the medical. Chris, remember, this is Harlingen, Texas. This isn't like Dallas Medical Examiner. There's a lot of people who know. I mean, there's only about 70,000 people that live in Harlingen. It's not very big. So people probably know each other. I'm just saying.
Pretty good chance of that, yes.
Yes. Okay, so Chris, after they arrest her for murdering Mariah, they end up offering her a plea deal. So if she pleads guilty, they'll give her 30 years. She declines this plea deal, so they take her to trial for capital murder. Which is interesting to me, because I kind of believe you either have to be completely arrogant and so self-assured that you're going to get off that you don't take a plea deal, or you're innocent and you're not going to say you're guilty. I don't know any other reason.
Yeah, those would be two of the biggies for sure.
So she declines this deal and they take her to trial. All right, so let's talk about this trial. At the trial, the jury was told that Mariah's injuries could only be explained by child abuse and complications from an accidental fall were completely impossible. Lucio's legal team says this information is false and it could have happened from a fall down the stairs. And based on that information alone, the execution of Melissa Lucio should be stopped. So the jury also did not hear about the years of abuse Melissa had endured as a child, as a young woman, which would put her under distress, or more likely to put her under distress, and given to questioning by male investigators. But what they were allowed to hear was from the Texas Ranger that said, based on her demeanor, having her head down in her hands, her lack of eye contact, told him she was hiding the truth. So he says that on the stand.
That could just be poor social skills.
which I am willing to bet she had. I mean, we're talking about, we're talking about someone, you know, who has a lot of children, probably, you know, like we said, started having children when she was a child, and just uneducated. And like you said, just lack of social skills, lack of, I don't know. I mean, no insurance, no money. You don't, you know, there's things you don't do when you don't have those things.
I deal with that every day. People come to the hospital.
You do.
It's my hospital when they're really, really, really sick because they don't have any insurance. And that's just, you know, the way indigent people roll, you know, in a lot of cases. So,
but it's not only that. There's also people who are people we know who maybe have their own businesses and don't have good insurance. So they too will sort of deal with things, and they will only go if they absolutely have to. I mean, there's a lot of people like that.
I have insurance and I only go when I absolutely have to.
Yeah, too. You're one of those and you do have insurance. But yeah, so the ranger is on the stand. He gives why he felt like she was guilty was just her. I mean, I don't know. If I just lost my child, maybe my head would be down in my hands too. I mean, this could be a grieving mother. I mean, I just think it's just for him to be able to get on the stand and say those things. There should have been something allowed in there for a fair trial. Now, listen, I'm not saying this woman, but this is the justice system. We, right? Innocent until proven guilty. So everyone in this country has a right to a fair trial. And, or that's what they tell us, right? So, you know, so then to make it fair. And that's why these appeals happen. This is why people go back, like Innocence Project, because people do get bad trials. Jury is convinced from the very beginning. And I feel like kind of that's where this landed. During the trial, Lucio's recorded statements from her interrogation were described as a confession. Now, this comes from the Cameron County DA, Armando Villalobos. Now, this guy is seeking re-election at the time that this crime happened. So he is going to pin this on her. Now, Chris, this guy is actually currently serving a 13-year federal prison sentence for bribery and extortion.
Border town.
Yeah, so, you know, he was guilty himself of something. So this guy, yeah, so, you know, he was the DA up for re-election. This is something that the Innocence Project talks a lot about. It was almost just the corruption that they felt was going on in this case.
Seems like a lot of these stories have the same little ring to them.
I know.
Small town. Everybody knows one another. Somebody's covering something up. Somebody's getting reelected.
I know. And you have to think, these are public servants, okay? A lot of them that are up for reelection in politics are serving the people. And I sometimes wonder, when did the people start to matter? Okay, on the night of
Never.
On the night of Mariah's death, Lucio told the EMTs and the police that Mariah had fell down the stairs. So later that night, during a videotaped interview with investigators, she explains that she had caused the bruises on Mariah's body by spanking Mariah real hard. And she also said nobody else would hit her. It was just me. I find that as a very interesting statement. To me, that sounds like a victim of abuse. Putting it on herself, not giving it to anyone else. Do I believe this woman gave this child all of these injuries? I don't. I think the husband, who was eventually arrested, Chris, for child neglect and abuse later on, years after that this happened.
Different child?
Different child. Mm-hmm. But again, guilty of the same things that we're seeing here, and the man lived in the house. So she says, yes, I caused some bruises. She also said that, okay, so she's trying to explain the hair thing. So she said 2 weeks before Mariah died, she's combing her hair and she grew frustrated with her other kids jumping around. So she pulled on her hair and bit her.
Well, you have to tug pretty hard to yank it out by the root.
I mean, this is becoming really hard to talk about. I mean, this is a mother telling. I mean, this was in a documented report that I pulled. So this isn't just Googling. So this is these are things that she actually said in the interrogation. Okay. Although Mariah, and think about this, Chris, kids are jumping around. You have 9 of them. You are probably, who knows how much the husband was home, okay? She always said they were cheating on her. They abused her. They sexually abused her, which is another reason she said she was getting pregnant.
So you mean they weren't cooking her lobster and shrimp fra diavolo?
People like you are hard to come by, babe.
Yeah, okay.
I keep telling you that. No, but so, you know, this is just, again, we're seeing the cycle of just victimization, socialization, and just such an unfortunate situation for these kids involved. Okay, but she tells authorities that although Mariah didn't do anything wrong, one time she placed her hand over her mouth and then bit her on the back. During the interrogation,
that's a little extreme. But.
This is all extreme. These kids, I mean, like I said, it's that's what I'm talking about. Like the circumstances of this case, it would be very difficult. I mean, I'm just a podcaster doing some research, reading about the case, reading in the court documents. I'm saying as a juror. Getting past these details of what this child went through, that would be very difficult to not put blame on her. Do you know what I mean?
Totally. I mean, I can, there are lots of fingers pointing in her direction.
Yes. And she was with the child most or all of the time. I mean, she's 2 years old. Okay, but she did say that she has never punched her daughter. She did not cause the scratches that were seen on Mariah's face. She's never hit Mariah on the head, and she definitely did not kill her daughter. But then she also told the investigators, fine, I'm responsible for it. That was a quote. I'm responsible for it. Okay, so this is it. Following the interrogation, Lucio makes a phone call. Who does she call? She calls her sister. Now, this conversation takes place in front of a police officer, and she tells her sister, don't blame Robert. This was me. I did it, so don't blame Robert. Now, this is an
act. Well, that may be why she's saying it's her fault. She didn't stop it from occurring, too. So,
which is where my heart and gut go. Okay, the state of Texas charges her with capital murder. At the trial, her sister, Chris, takes the stand, and she testifies about that phone call. She denied that Lucio said, this was me, I did it. So she's saying that those words actually were never said, but rather, her sister says that they only discussed the spanking and that Lucio said, I would spank the kids. Lucio's sister also denied that she spanked Mariah. She said her sister never disciplined her kids. It gets very confusing. Because this child, she just had so many marks on her. Did nobody ever see her? Did they never let her leave the house? How does a neighbor or something notice what's going on? I don't know. Okay, the jury also heard testimony concerning Mariah's injuries. The forensic pathologist who performed Mariah's autopsy testified that her injuries, so here we're going to talk about this, Chris, So the forensic pathologist, who was not the other, that was not the medical examiner, that her injuries were not the result of a fall. This is a child, and this is a quote, this is a child that's been beaten. This is a battered child. In the pathologist's expert opinion, Mariah died from blunt force trauma to the head from abuse. So this is the pathologist's ruling. At the trial, the emergency room doctor who tried to revive Mariah testified that this was the absolute worst case of child abuse he'd seen in his 30-year career. I always say, Chris, I am one to listen to experts. I like to follow science, and I like to follow people who know what they're talking about and who have knowledge and are educated to discuss these things. And I absolutely agree with this emergency room doctor who has no reason to lie about any of this. And to be an ER doctor for 30 years, oh, he's seen some shit. And for him to come out and say it is the worst case he's ever seen, I can only imagine. Okay, to rebut this evidence, Lucio's medical expert said that Mariah was physically abused, but he also stated that her death could have been caused by either a fall or being hit by a strong force. Chris, I haven't mentioned this, but this child had bruises on her liver and spinal cord. Can you explain that as a medical professional, how you get bruises on your liver?
Well, I would think that would come from more of a punch than a fall. It'd have to take something kind of sharp and fist-shaped to create that, I would think.
The spinal cord?
That could have probably occurred from a fall. But your liver is kind of, you know, it's a little more
right
shrouded by ribs and stuff like that. So
it would just take extra force, I would say, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, you'd have to push a rib into it, you know, and that's, it's possible, I think, because just like people have ruptured spleens and whatnot from car accidents and, mm-hmm. you know, they damage organs that way too. It's a car accident, so I mean, somebody's obviously traveling at a high rate of speed, and quite a bit of force is behind that.
So the jury had to decide, Chris, if this was blunt force trauma from a fall or from beating this child that never got a chance to see her third birthday. The jury finds her guilty, and she is ultimately sentenced to death. Okay, Chris, now we have about 30 days until this woman is executed. Do we believe she is guilty of murder? Is she guilty of a lesser offense? Unfortunately, in the justice system, and I say unfortunately, because sometimes, because of cases like this, we want to impose verdicts based on our own personal feelings. If you're not a lawyer or a judge or have any reason to be unbiased in a situation like this, what this child endured is terrible, just unbelievably violent, terrible, 2 years old. 2 years old. She can't even talk, barely. So you take it out on her, the other frustrations of life, the other children, which is what I believe. I believe she was it was easy to take it out on her. I mean, this is just, it's just so terrible. It's just so terrible. Okay, so because common sense tells us that anyone of sound mind would have recognized that this child needed medical attention. Her husband had a history of abuse, and Chris, she grows up in poverty. She's lived through repetitive abuse, and I do believe that cycles like this only tend to end if they're dealt with on a more professional level. If you have dealt with a lifetime of abuse, you have to break that cycle. And the only way to really break that cycle is to understand things about it and how to move forward. And if you don't have the background or the education or the common sense or the upbringing to know that it's wrong, then it just continues. The cycle just continues. Is she guilty of abuse herself, neglect, covering up abuse of a child? Did she do it? Okay, what do you believe? What do you think, Chris? I mean, this woman's set to die in 30 days.
Well, I've only been presented the facts of the case just based on the research that we've done. So I don't know what to say personally. I think it'd be way different sitting on that jury and seeing a lot of the stuff and really seeing this stuff firsthand.
Yeah. Which I think was hard for them to get past.
Because as a casual bystander, you can be swayed back and forth many different directions in this case. So I don't know to answer your question.
Well, I think that the jury, I think that the facts of the case were hard to get past is what I think. I think she is guilty of covering up abuse. I think she's guilty of abuse herself. I mean, biting your child is abuse. Pulling their hair out from the roots is abuse. Okay. And, you know, but is, and this is what I do believe the court took into consideration when they decided on this guilty verdict, was the life that this child had to live. And like I said, the state of Texas, they don't like child abusers. No court system does, but state of Texas doesn't like people who mistreat children. And they'll do exactly what they did to her. They will find you guilty of capital murder and they will sentence you to die. And, but did she, is she guilty of something of a lesser offense? You know, that's the question. That's what the Innocence Project is working towards. I mean, they feel like she, a victim herself, through all of these years, being interrogated like that, giving a false confession. We know these things happen. We know that people in her state and the way she grew up and her upbringing and her abuse has a lot to do with the way she could have just falsely confessed. And yes, I do feel like she's guilty on a lot of fronts, but the fact of the matter is she guilty of the capital murder? That's what this really is. Is she guilty of the capital murder? The blunt force trauma based on the medical records, they do believe the hit occurred within 24 hours before finding the child deceased. So they do believe the blow was given the day before she was found. And the fall from the stairs happened 2 days before, which it can be 1-2 days. So I don't know. There's some people who believe she is innocent of capital murder. And there are some people who believe that she is where she ought to be. This was a tough one. And if you want to check out records for yourself, you can go to the Innocence Project or you can just look up Melissa Lucio and see what is going on with her case. But again, I think this is going to be a really, really tough one for to get a stay of execution on, based on the fact of this child's injuries, what she had gone through. And I think that's just hard for people to get past sometimes, Chris. And there may be some people who believe that she was willing to put up with her husband who beat on her child, that maybe she does belong where she is. And I, those are just the two kinds of, that's what we're weighing right now. Is she guilty of the capital murder or is she just guilty of abuse and covering it up and covering up for the person who may have inflicted this injury? This is a tough one, babe.
I agree.
All right, friends, that concludes this week's episode. You can find us on social media. And of course, if you want to support the show, just check us out on Patreon. All right, now to the wine. Perfect for summer, perfect with your dinner, babe. We are giving this one four corks.
I agree.
Four corks.
Along with that, yes.
Summer is approaching. Check out our friends at Cassaro Winery right there in Ovilla, Texas, just 20 miles from downtown Dallas. Chris, we've been there a few times ourselves.
We have.
Great wine. Go visit them. They've got this beautiful outdoor area. The weather is starting to be perfect. Great time for a visit. Okay, so for this week with an organization, Chris, this one is for Little Mariah. I want to share PreventChildAbuse.org. Prevent Child Abuse America is a leading champion for all children across the U.S. Evidence shows that children's early experiences impact them throughout life, positively, of course, and negatively. You can contribute when you contribute, your funds will help enable the safe, stable, and nurturing relationships and environments that ensure children and families succeed and communities thrive. I am willing to bet there are probably hundreds of child abuse organizations wherever you're listening from in your state, near your state. So if you want to look one up that interests you, we just have to stop the cycle. And there's really nothing that pisses me off more than abusing a child. So I was trying not to get too heated in this case. All right. Well, you can check out our friends at preventchildabuse.org. Read how you can become a part of their organization. And if you see something, say something. It's better to be wrong and not report it than to be right and have not said anything at all. All right, babe. Are you ready to go?
Are you ready to go?
No, I like talking to my friends out there. This is a hard case. I'm going to have to go. I need a break. All right, friends. Until next time, stay safe, have fun, and cheers to next time.
Cheers, everybody.